Welcome to In the Field, a podcast originating from the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources at Michigan State University. I'm your host, Craig M. In this episode of In the Field, I'm joined by Tom Ryan, co-founder and chief concept officer, Smashburger, and founder Tom's Urban, and Dr. Ian Gray, special advisor to the president. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Okay, Tom, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm born and raised in Michigan, Grand Rapids. I'm a Spartan three times deep. Very proud to be back on campus. I did my undergrad in food science, my master's in lipid toxicology, PhD with Ian as my major professor in flavor chemistry. Had a long and arduous career in the food industry, and of the last 25 years been doing restaurants. And the latest and greatest and most fun thing I've ever done is the development and expansion of both Smashburger and Tom's Urban.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're also, in your career, you had at Pizza Hut, Stuffed Crust Pizzas, McDonald's, the McGriddles, Big and Tasty, Dollar Menu, Fruit and Yogurt Parfaits. My wife said thank you very much for that.
She's welcome.
Quiznos, Steakhouse Beef Dip, Prime Rib, and Sammy's Subs. Is that
close? You know, I've done a lot of work inside of companies to really help, you know, extend their brand platform, drive revenues, and really innovate their food to be modern, contemporary, and kind of change the face of the landscape. And so all those things are great examples of like more of my product development career versus concept development and restauranteuring. But I had a great time doing that and enjoyed doing those in the past.
Now, Ian, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, obviously, my career path was a lot different than Tom's. So I'm truly been an academic all my life. I came over to Michigan State in the early 1970s. I did a postdoc for a couple of years and then went to Canada. Came back to Canada in 1978 as a associate professor. And I started to teach food chemistry, food analysis, which gave me access to some of the top undergraduates in the food science program at the time. That's one of the reasons I, Tom and I met, and through that program, we got Tom into his master's and then his PhD program. So I've been working, essentially a food chemist, but looking at the toxic, the effect of cooking and processing on the formation of toxic compounds. And so I've had a privileged career at MSU from the point of been able to teach, been able to do research, and got into the research administration, both as the director of then the experiment station, Ag Experiment Station, and subsequently the KMVP for research and graduate studies at the university. So overall, it's been a kind of a very balanced career portfolio, which is coming to an end. But at the same time, you take great pride in seeing the success stories of our graduates, and particularly your own graduates.
Now, Tom, it's your junior year of college. You're not quite sure what you want to do. And suddenly your focus zeroes in on food science. Focus so much that, like you mentioned, your food science undergraduate degree, master's degree in lipid toxicology, and a doctorate in flavor and fragrance chemistry from Michigan State. What about Dr. Gray made you want to study food science?
Yeah, it actually started a little bit before Dr. Gray. I took my first food science class as a junior and had really no idea that there was as deep a technology and a fundamental scientific understanding of things I was taking for granted my entire life. My first food science class was the physics of food processing, and I absolutely fell in love with the discipline. And I was really voracious at that point to really just absorb as much of it as I can. I kind of fell in love with it as an academic pursuit when I met Ian in our food analysis and chemistry class. Thought his teaching style was engaging. I was really honored and felt really privileged to be invited to come and do, you know, original research with Ian and go through the process of advanced degree and writing thesis. You know, Ian was always an engaging teacher, easy to talk to. And then I was really pleased when I made the decision to do my master's with him. Not only was it a great and thorough education, but it was the first time in my academic career I actually felt like I was learning from somebody who treated me very maturely, and not only as an adult, but as a friend as an adult. And so it was a huge difference of point of view to go from undergrad to graduate school, and it was like starting all over for me. So it was very exciting, and obviously I absorbed that equally as much as I did my undergrad, and then loved the whole process.
Ian, what did you see in Tom as a student that made you think he would be successful?
Well, that's a good question, because I think you can assess potential. Now, I had the advantage, to be honest. I always claimed my accent opened up doors for me that normally wouldn't, because it helped me get good student ratings for teaching. But seriously, I think I had early access to good quality students, and it's very very clear, you know, when you look at students' performance in lab settings and so forth in the classroom, that you know, it doesn't always translate to a propensity for research either. So, but Tom and there were several others in the group too that came in at the same time from that his graduating class. You know, the first cohort of grad students I had at MSU were truly outstanding for the first 10 years when I was full-time in the department. The quality of the grad students, particularly those coming through our own programs, was phenomenal. And Tom never disappointed. Tom had a kind of uniqueness about him. And it's very unusual for a student to get 3 degrees in the same place. You know, in fact, it was frowned upon sometimes. You know, you go out and look at different philosophies and so on. But you know, you got to treat every student individually. And one of the things, and Tom mentioned it, you got to treat every student as if they're your own child. You know, this is they're placing their trust in you. They're placing their trust in that you can educate them. And the whole idea of any successful graduate program is not the research accomplishment per se in publications, but can you turn out a well-trained individual who is self-sufficient, somebody who is ready to make a mark? And that's the overall goal of all research programs. How do I develop the next generation of scholars? And scholars that will fit into industry, scholars that will fit into government circles, scholars that will fit into academia. Now, Tom had showed very early on that he had a propensity for going beyond traditional research. And we'll talk a little bit maybe later about Tom's choice of coursework, for example, during his PhD dissertation that allowed him to move in areas where traditionally wasn't very common at that time. More so now, but Tom had a PhD program tailored to fit his future needs. And that's something of which I think we all take a lot of greater satisfaction and pride in doing.
What Ian's trying to say is I was his troubled middle child back in the 80s, and he was kind enough to kind of temper his way through that with me. And actually, he did allow me the intellectual freedom and actually the academic freedom to really tailor a program that was really avant-garde for people going through what was really an academically focused PhD program, at least at the PhD level. And it changed my life. I mean, the ability to have the flexibility to bring people onto my committee who weren't puerile food scientists, who had a point of view about marketing, who had a contemporary point of view about commercialization, things that really were essential in being able to move past academia and making an impact on things on the consumer side of the business. I always was kind of driven by that. And Ian, you know, was great in accommodating my ability to really put something really unique and original together in both my research, my curriculum, and my committee that gave me something that I think was hugely, in hindsight, a competitive advantage for me to be able to get to do things that other people would take years of experience to gain credentials to do. So I'm feel very privileged and entitled.
But, you know, it's a very important point here is that we did not divert Tom from taking the strong fundamental disciplinary classes. You know, Tom took as an aggressive course in the chemistry, the food science courses, the advanced food science courses, the statistics classes that were the requirements of all graduate students. And remember, in those days, we're in the quarter system, where there was 36 course credits, 36 research credits minimum for the PhD. But the fact that Tom took an aggressive master's course program allowed him the flexibility to move into other elective courses that were part of the 36 credits that he took. And as a result of that, he got into food marketing, some of the business classes and so on. And that came not at the expense of the more science system, because I'm a very strong believer the rigor of the science, the better prepared the student. Tom did that, but he also got the, you know, exposure to what it's like in the marketing world and so on, which was very consistent with his interests at that time.
Now, what you learned from Ian, was it more than just book knowledge that he passed on to you?
Yeah, look, I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk about it in depth, but Ian's teaching style, you know, I'm a big fan of motivation and building people's credentials on the basis of commitment versus compliance. And so Ian was very open in terms of intellectual thinking, which I think is kind of a greens fee for people who have the profession Ian had. But more than that, Ian was fun and engaging. Ian provided us a culture so that grad school, which can be either tenuous or tedious depending on what phase of the work you're in, he surrounded us with a great culture to be engaging with each other. The team he put together, which I, instead of fellow grad students, it was really like a team. We played IM sports together. We played tennis together at lunchtime when we could. We went out and had drinks together. It was more than just a student-teacher relationship. It was really the first real working culture that I ever went in, and Ian was the head of that. So he provided us not only with, I think, a great amount of academic input, a lot of counseling on how to put thesis and research proposals together, but he made it fun. I mean, and I don't mean fun in a trivial way. I mean, it was an engaging environment surrounded by great people who really enjoyed what they were doing and spending time together doing it. And so I think that's another rarity based on conversations I've had with others who've gone through graduate programs. They're like, really? That's really what your graduate program was like? And it was a rare thing. And we all kind of knew it was a little bit magic while we were going through it, but it was magic. It was great.
And I was essentially new to MSU too. So I had graduate students at the University of Guelph, but Tom and, you know, and another PhD student I brought down from Guelph with me, Manalai Lee, we were talking about her last night, were the first of that cohort. And it was kind of magical because the grants were successful, the applications were successful, we had money to do things, and we had a great group of students. Now, one of the, you know, you surround yourself with good people. You know, we have a common bond with a major professor, the one I did my postdoc on, the one that Tom took advanced lipid chemistry from, Dr. Leroy Dugan. He was one of those traditional faculty members who was, you know, he was a class act. Absolutely, all I can say about Leroy Dugan, and he's still alive and doing very well. But one of the persons that really had an influence on both of us was we had a visiting scholar from England for a year, Ian Morton, and Ian Morton is the chair of the Queen Elizabeth College Food Science Department, and he wanted to get away from administration, and he spent 10 to 12 hours a day in the lab working on a project. And he took Tom under his wing, and this is the, you know, the basis of Tom's master work, the oxidation of cholesterol in heated frying oils. And as a result of that, you know, Tom got exposed to another culture, another discipline, another point of view about research, how you can conduct research, because you want to glean from everywhere you're around. You want to be in situations, or we try to create an environment where students will glean from each other or learn from each other, interact with each other. And it can be done in the formal lab setting, and it can be done socially. So we try to balance that out. It's not that it was all fun. There was tensions, there was arguments, there was, you know, and it's, you know, one of the worst things ever happening is if somebody's project's not going well and other projects are going well, that immediately causes tension because that person's getting further ahead of the game than I am, you know, forgetting the fact that every project's individual, every project's different. Some will work, some will not. Some will get positive results, some will get negative results. But you balance it all out, and you can do that in multiple ways. But it's simply, you got to trust the student, and the student's got to trust you. And if that trust is ever eroded, we lose an awful lot of that. So we developed a trust. Tom was under my watch. I trusted his data taking and all that stuff, and we both benefited. I got the publication shared with Tom. He got the benefit of multiple investigators working together. And as a result, Tom got off, I think, on a firm career path.
What did you see was your toughest challenge while you were here as a student?
Yeah, you know, it's a really personal question. I mean, to me, the intrigue, you know, the blank, I'm a big fan of the blank page. I mean, I am totally intrigued by embracing things that are unknown and figuring them out. The toughest part for me, in all candor, were the parts of graduate research that don't involve the discovery on the blank page. And there's two parts of that that I just have to be honest with. I was not a big fan of having to repeat research to prove validity. I mean, it was like having to rediscover the same thing twice, but without the energy at the end. And so the redundancy that's required, it was something academically driven, but and it's required, and I respect it, and I did it with integrity, but it was really tedious. And there is, in my opinion, and I hate to say it, nothing worse than a lit review. Nothing. And so, but it's part of the discipline, and I respect the discipline. It's with me every day. But in back in the day, I would love to do a lit review now with the ability to Google and have access to those things at my fingertips. But in the old days, we actually had to go and pull cards and pull papers and request reprints. And it took forever to get all the things together. And you had to knit those into a historical quilt, if you will, that got the reader, the academic reader, to a point where your piece added the next piece to the puzzle. And again, it wasn't that it wasn't valuable. It wasn't that it wasn't interesting. It just wasn't my favorite thing. And so I had to make myself get it done. And it was a really tough discipline thing for me, because I like to think and do instead of reflect. And that's the honest to God truth. But Ian was great. He only made me rewrite it four or five times. And
yeah, I only went through about three or four red pens. Okay, so the whole secret in grading is how much red can you put on there, and
yes,
then tell the folks it wasn't all bad.
Yes.
But that's the way.
But we had good humor throughout the whole thing, and it was a great experience and necessary for, you know, the standards and the accreditation, the high level of standard and accreditation that Ian held us accountable to. So I get it. I got it.
And you know, and you were, you know, any time you do a dissertation, it's a little different now, but I always took the view that when a grad student and the professor writes a dissertation or thesis, that is in as good a shape as we collectively can do before we present it to the guidance committee or the examining committee. You know, it's different philosophies on that now, but the whole idea, we would take pride, you know, that if you submit a project to the dissertation to the examining committee, and Tom's sitting up there getting questions on that, you know, I die along with Tom when he's not answering the questions, or there's some questions here, because, you know, that was a joint effort.
It's a team.
So I'm sitting here, you know, when students are getting answered, and they look blankly at the person because they're supposed to know more about this topic than anybody surrounding them around the table. When they have some flaws in that, that's a personal insult to me as well as to the students. So the whole idea is to, you know, and that's why it's so, you know, we talk about literature review or the critical review. Literature is probably a better way of putting it. You know, that's a necessary part of getting the student prepared to defend. But it becomes a personal thing. You know, is the student going to beat the system or, you know, beat the system, defeat the system, get the degree? It's not about, you know, how does my research compare to somebody else's in the group? It's just simply, have I met the requirements? Have I surpassed the necessary requirements to get a degree? So you want to give the student every advantage when that student comes before the examiners that makes the defense that much easier. That's why we take care in detail.
And we did.
We did.
You did rather well.
We did. Yep.
Now, what are some of your favorite memories involving each other?
I'll go first. So this is besides the red pen. Actually, one of the great things we had going is by the time all of us had gotten, our whole office had gotten into completion of our coursework, really focused just on research. And so the day would get to come in the lab at 8 and leave at 6 and do nothing but research was really, really, first of all, I don't think you could mentally do it with the kind of acuity you need to. And so we needed to find a break. And in the semesters that Ian wasn't teaching, we all had student numbers that were, I think, were someplace around 1 and 2. We were there for so long. We actually had proprietary access to the tennis courts inside at the old men's IM. And we actually, four of us went out and hit a tennis ball for an hour, hour and 15 minutes, multiple times in the week just to let off steam and kind of get our brains refreshed, a little physical activity. And it was hilarious. We had a ball. It was fun. walked over together, walked back together. It was really fun. And I mean, that's that you don't find that. I mean, I talked to my other peers who had advanced speeds. It was just a rare thing that just happened to be what we ended up doing as you said, as a team. And it was one of the more pleasant ways to think about getting up in the morning. You know, you're going to have a little bit of fun in the middle of the afternoon and then go back and get the job done. So that's one of my favorites.
Well, it's actually one of my favorites too, but Tom tells it, you know, the story's a little different than Tom says, because I never played tennis. You know, I never played tennis before I came to MSU. I had to go out and buy a racket. So here I'm tagging along, and I was always Tom's partner, because Tom was better than the other two people. Tom could play those two guys that we played against regularly, who are also PhD students. He could play them by himself and still beat them. So when he added me to the group, it really increased the odds of the other two beating us. But so he carried me. So I'll admit, he carried me. Now, it's we had fun. We did have a lot of fun. And it's the same thing on the golf course. We didn't play as much golf as we did, because that was too time-consuming.
Yeah.
I was kind of a frustrated guy who, I'd love to see the students in the lab at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'd like to leave before they left, right? That was my mantra. Now, we had one faculty member, or one graduate student in the group, one of our tennis players, who was a night person, who would like to come into the lab about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and work till later on at night. But I wasn't completely trusting at the time of that. I was, the work wasn't getting done. So I'm thinking, I want you here at 8 o'clock. I don't give a hoot if you work till 1 o'clock in the morning. I want you here at 8 o'clock in the morning. So we had some tensions over that. But with time, you know, you get a bit more flexible. And as long as you have your weekly meetings with the student, you get the data, you know, progressing along and so forth, then all's well. Every student's different. And it's part of the learning process. I had to learn. I had to learn how to deal with graduate students a little better, particularly when you're dealing with 10 and you know, the tensions there. And I taught six quarter classes a year at the same time. But so there was a lot of tensions. And my family was young, so how do you get the right balance to all of this? But I have to say, to all extent, my family, my wife, embraced my grad students great. They were great friends. You know, she got along well with them, and she knew them. And we had them out at the house several times a year, and it was just a good time.
It was great. And I would add to that, you know, a couple other smaller things. I mean, not just about Ian and I, but our department at the time was really a kind of a interesting and fabulous place to be. I mean, this was 1979 to 1984. Mm-hmm. We had a big concentration of multi-ethnic grad students from around the world, and it was a very collegial department at the graduate level. We all knew each other. We all hung out together. Once a year, around the holidays, all the international students would pool together and bring foods in from their individual countries. And for us, it was like that was a rare thing. So this early appreciation for cultural diversity and celebrating their traditions and ours, I mean, you abstract that when you're living it in real time. But in hindsight, I mean, that was a really cool thing that we did together as a department that we were both part of. And I have very fond memories of that. So, you know, I still have a healthy amount of respect for, we were talking last night about foods from around the world. I will tell you this, though, my one regret in hindsight is that I wish food back then was as cool as it is to everybody as it is now, because we were really pioneering. When we were studying food science, you tell people, I'm studying food science. And they're like, the hell is that? And now, as I like to tell people, you know, food is one of the most topical, you know, food, cooking equipment, processing of foods, where it comes from, how it got there, what are you doing to it? I mean, it's probably one of the most passionate threads in the social fabric out there right now. And so it's really great to have done all this early so I can enjoy this as this part of my life. But I can't imagine what kind of a rock star we would have been in if this was as cool we were doing what we were doing then.
Well, the terminology's changed. You know, just to, we talk about agricultural research. Now, agricultural research sometimes is a negative thing to be looking at NIH or NSF funding in the modern world, in the modern era. But really, you know, when you're looking at agricultural research, we're doing research to develop knowledge that will improve agriculture or take care of agricultural problems. So it's a lot of it's very, very science-based. Same thing with food. You know, we're looking at the science of food. And, you know, so you can easily teach, learn processing through, you know, practical experiences with the industry and so on. But when you look at the scientific principles undergirding the discipline of food science, it's pure science working in an applied area. And it's when you look at that, there is we need to modern food science requires physics, engineering principles, toxicological principles. It all falls under that umbrella. Now, that's about, 30 plus years ago when we were working on that. So we were kind of narrow in focus. Now you expand it. So we become a food university, and we bring expertise from all over campus. The students benefit from that because they seek multidisciplinary training. That's key. Tom, in a sense, was a forerunner to multidisciplinary approaches. He chose business options, business course options in his PhD. We're doing the same thing now in a different way with the modern graduate. So it's I would say Tom's a little bit of a pioneer in that sense.
And it's really been instrumental. I mean, as I said earlier, it empowered me to feel confident and comfortable doing things. I mean, I may be wrong, but I've got to be one of the only CMOs at McDonald's who's ever been a food scientist or maybe a CMO anywhere. And so the actual benefit of coming out of school proficient in the language, proficient in the vernacular of this other field, which is really a differentiated field from the academic science undergirding, as Ian calls it, of food. I mean, I would go to my first job at Pizza Hut, and people would talk to me and say, aren't you a technical guy? You sound like a marketing guy. And, you know, that was really rewarding to me because I earned those stripes early just by the affiliation with fellow students in the Graduate School of Business while I was doing my work for Ian. So everybody's on the right track thinking about this the same way. Multidisciplinary thinking with a strong taproot that gives you credibility and earnestness in one area, but with color story and abilities around the outside, I think that's what modern education is all about. I know that's what we look for in the industry and candidates that we look for, regardless of what job they're interviewing for. And so I'm really, my first time back to state in a while, I'm proud to see this flourishing on campus, and I'm really happy to see it alive and well, particularly in the food science department.
I would like to thank Tom Ryan, co-founder and chief concept officer of Smashburger, and founder of Tom's Urban, and Dr. Ian Gray, special advisor to the president, for joining me today. Be sure to listen next time for another episode of In the Field,